Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Several years ago, we interviewed Reverend James Martin of the Society of Jesus about his book, A Jesuit Off-Broadway. That was quite a few years ago, and I've been keeping track of Father Martin's writings all throughout these years. Sometime last year, I received a copy of his latest book, Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. I received it from probably Harper One, the publisher itself, and I wanted to arrange an interview, but it turns out that by the time I contacted them, Father Martin was engaged in other things and couldn't do it. Well, after that, it seems that much of the Catholic community and probably other parts of the greater Christian community as well just exploded with criticism towards this book. And I thought, you know, maybe, just maybe, Father Martin would like to respond to the response of his book. So I contacted him directly, and he was ever so kind to agree to be on our program today to talk about the book and the response to the book, and maybe a response to the response to the response of the book. Let me tell you a little bit about Father Martin. As I mentioned, he is a Jesuit. He is the editor-at-large of America Magazine, consultant to the Vatican's Secretariat for Communication, and also best-selling author. Besides the book I mentioned, he's written Seven Last Words, The Abbey, Jesus, A Pilgrimage, The Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything, and Between Heaven and Mirth. Father Martin has written for many publications, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and he is a regular commentator in the national and international media. He's appeared on all major radio and television networks and in venues ranging from NPR's Fresh Air to Fox's Fox and Friends and PBS's NewsHour to Comedy Central's The Colbert Report. Before entering the Jesuits in 1988, Father Martin graduated from the Wharton School of Business and worked for General Electric for 6 years. He's also known as Sick, Wicked, A Filthy Liar, The Smoke of Satan, and Heretic on the Fast Track to Eternal Damnation. So we're very thrilled to get him before his eternal damnation. We want to welcome to Common Threads Father James Martin. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. So, wow, you've had an interesting few months of your life recently, much of which involved not doing a whole lot because several of your speaking engagements had been canceled. What has life been like since the publication of Building a Bridge and the ensuing concern?
Well, that's, I would say, just part of it. You know, I've had 4 talks canceled, I think, but I've also given probably about 50 talks, you know, in the meantime. The overwhelming majority of people who have read the book have really been grateful for it, and, you know, particularly LGBT Catholics and their families and friends, and, you know, really, I would say 99% of the Catholic faithful. So it's really a bunch of online self-appointed orthodoxy police / hate groups and homophobic websites, you know, of which there are quite a few, who have really ginned up these protests. So overall, my life has been pretty great. I mean, it's been very moving to meet LGBT people and hear their stories. And I was just a few weeks ago with a group of LGBT students from Jesuit colleges and universities who were meeting in Baltimore. And, you know, it's just very moving to be with them. So my life's been great. I mean, the pushback has been odd, and it was surprising, but it comes with the territory. I mean, you know, Jesus was opposed, so, you know, why wouldn't I be opposed? And I'm much less than Jesus. So if, you know, if we're supposed to follow in his footsteps, you know, blessed are those who are persecuted. So, you know, I'm not surprised by it.
And have you ever had anything like this before? I mean, you are a Jesuit, so I know that members of the Society of Jesus are often a little bit out front of the rest of perhaps the clergy and the laity They have been on a number of issues over the years. So I'm suspecting you're not a stranger to this kind of blowback.
Well, I'm a stranger to this kind of blowback. I mean, there are a couple websites that, and I'm not kidding, literally every day have a new article about me, a video, a protest. It's a little extreme. My other books, I had a book on Jesus, which, you know, was very well received and, you know, is a, you know, New York Times bestseller and all that, and Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything. And no, nothing, there weren't protests. But the irony is that this book, which has the official approval of my Jesuit superiors, it's been endorsed by, I just got the new paperback copy, you know, 3 cardinals, 3 archbishops, 3 bishops, and is based on the Gospels, is pretty mild. Most of the people that are critiquing it have not read it. And a few months ago, there was a bishop who devoted his column in his Catholic newspaper to the article, to the book, and halfway through the article, he said, "I admit I haven't read it." And I thought, well, all right, well, then how seriously am I supposed to take that review? So I usually suggest people read the book.
Yeah, we had a big dust-up here, oh, gosh, it was well over a decade ago. And we had the, what was the name of the play that was here in Grand Rapids? Come on. It's the one.
Oh, Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi. Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome.
And it was interesting because much of the protest came from people who didn't even read it. Although
right.
I maintain after...
Let alone see it.
Yeah, because I personally believe that you really had to see it to critique it and not just read it.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. We had some clergy at a talk back afterwards, and I remember a couple of them saying that they read the play before they came to see it, and they were actually a little bit nervous because they didn't quite know how they would be able to respond because of how they read it. And when they saw it, they go, oh, okay, that's what he's trying to say. And then they could be fully supportive of it. So, let me ask you this. How did this happen in terms of how did you get disinvited from Catholic University of America? What kind of machine is at work there?
Well, there are some, as I said, online far-right orthodoxy police websites. There's one called Church Militant. There's one called LifeSite News. There's one called, if you can believe it, Tradition, Family, and Property. And they got it in their heads that my talks, which, by the way, were on Jesus, they were not on LGBT Catholics. I had a few talks coming up. One was at Theological College, which was a seminary at Catholic University of America. And they basically whipped up people online by saying, here's this terrible heretic, which is false, who's coming to speak at Theological College. Call Theological College and deluge them with phone calls. So they were, you know, deluged with phone calls, and they decided it would be better to cancel it. You know, but I told them, and, you know, this is all public, it's not secret. You know, I said, if you cancel it, it's, you know, if you have protests, there's going to be 5 people praying the rosary outside, right? If you cancel it, it's going to be much worse for you. And sure enough, they canceled it, and it was in the New York Times. And they had to backtrack, and Catholic University of America apologized, and Theological College, you know, looked like they were caving to bullies. And, you know, recently I gave a talk at in New Jersey that was canceled at a parish, this group of parishes, and the same thing happened. You know, they decided to cancel it because they were afraid. That's the idea. They were afraid of protests. It's not that they themselves think that I am somehow, you know, out of bounds. It's they're afraid. And, you know, my line is, you know, in the New Testament we hear perfect love drives out fear. I'm sure you know that line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, perfect fear drives out love. And so when people are afraid of whatever, usually protests or something, they act irrationally. So that's what happens. And you know, as I said, what's worse for the organization is when they cancel it because they look terrible.
Certainly.
And people are more angry at the cancellation. And usually what happens is you get a huge crowd at the, you know, at the next talk.
Right, right,
so
of course.
So in the end, it works against, you know, the designs of some of these websites. The week that that cancellation happened, my book sales tripled.
I was going to ask about that. I thought that this would probably be really good for you from that line of thinking.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, on the one hand, it's good for, you know, selling books and people read it. On the other hand, you know, frankly, it's not, it doesn't bother me interiorly, but, you know, it is not helpful for my ministry as a priest or as a Jesuit that, you know, Catholics now think that I'm a heretic, which is false. You know, it's a specific charge. And, you know, heresy doesn't mean I don't, you know, you can't say you're a heretic just because you don't like what I've written. You know, the book is, you know, it's based on the Gospels. It's basically saying we need to respect LGBT people.
Right.
So where does this all come from? It basically comes from homophobia and hatred. You know, it's hatred. That we have to be really clear about where this is coming from.
So let me ask you this. How would you grade the Catholic Church's first 2,000 years of treating people who would be classified as LGBT?
D.
Okay. And the reasons for that?
Hate, homophobia, misunderstanding, prejudice, and, you know, scapegoating. I mean, I think I'd also treat, but the church is not alone. You know, I would say society also treated people like that. So, you know, you have, imagine 50 years ago, you know, saying I'm gay or I'm a lesbian. I mean, you know, unthinkable.
Oh, absolutely.
The way that people were treated and, you know, beaten up. And, you know, still today, there are 70 countries where you can be jailed for being LGBT, right? Some countries you can be executed. So, you know, it's not, and you know, the LGBT people are the victims of proportionally more hate crimes in the United States than any other group. So it's still going on. The church often reflects society, but I think the problem is that when it comes to religion, people think they have God on their side for being hateful, right? I mean, they take a few lines out of the Catechism or the Gospels or the Old Testament, you know, even worse in terms of, like, contextualizing things, and they use that, you know, forgetting the call of Jesus to us to love people and welcome them and not to judge them.
If you're just
so
joining
I'll tell
us,
you,
yes. Go
pardon
ahead.
Me?
No, go right ahead.
So I'll read something from my book.
Yes.
In many parts of the world, LGBT persons are liable to experience appalling incidents of prejudice, violence, and murder. Roundups of LGBT people happen regularly in countries like Indonesia, Egypt, Azerbaijan, and Chechnya. In some countries, a person can be jailed or executed for being gay or having same-sex relations. As of this writing, engaging in same-sex relations is a crime in 70 countries, and simply being gay is punishable by death in 13 countries. So this is the world in which we live, and this is the world in which the church needs to finally stand up for these people. I'm not saying anything about same-sex marriage or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, respect and love and stand up for these poor people. But even that is too much for people. Even that whips up this hatred.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Father James Martin, and he is the author of Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity, recently released in paperback. So Father, the premise of this book, we have to be very clear about this now. You're not talking about gay marriage. You're not talking about attempting to completely rewrite all of the dogma or doctrine on how homosexuality should be viewed from a moral or spiritual standpoint.
That's correct.
Okay, you're talking about entering into conversation and developing mutual respect.
That's correct. Yeah, so I'm starting from the Gospels, you know, where Jesus reaches out to the people who in his time felt the most marginalized, right? Those were people who were sick, lepers, tax collectors, prostitutes, Roman centurions. So, you know, I'm not saying that LGBT people are any more sinful than anyone else, you know, because a lot of these people were considered in Jesus's time sinful. The point is that they felt like they were on the margins. And what Jesus does is reach out first to people on the margins. That's the first thing. So it's firmly rooted in the Gospels. And, you know, simply loving people is an important part of the Gospels. Second, the Catechism of the Catholic Church asks us to treat them with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. That's right from the Catechism. And basically all I do is, as you say, I don't talk about same-sex marriage or anything like that. I say, let's unpack what it would mean to respect them, be compassionate, and be sensitive. And it's very simple things, as you mentioned, you know, listening to them. But even that freaks people out. Even that is seen as beyond the pale. And so frankly, you know, when I hear or see these websites saying these crazy things, I just, you know, I kind of ignore it. Because if you're going to tell me that I can't even listen to someone, you know, I mean, what's the point? So that kind of opposition doesn't really deter me, nor should it deter anybody.
I'm curious, has any of these websites attempted to engage you in any sort of dialogue?
That's a very good question. The answer is no. There have been, you know, some critics of the book. First of all, the book's, as I said, it's been endorsed by, okay, Cardinal Joseph Tobin, Archbishop of Newark, Cardinal Blaise Supich, Archbishop of Chicago, Cardinal Kevin Farrell, Prefect of the Vatican's Dicastery for Vatican for Laity, Family, and Life, Bishop McElroy of San Diego, Archbishop Wester of Santa Fe, you know, on and on and on. So, you know, there have been many, you know, positive reviews. And the critical reviews that have been thoughtful, you know, I mean, it's a book, right? I mean, it's supposed to be starting a dialogue and a conversation. I was happy to respond to, you know, like, oh, I have a question about this, or what did you mean by that, or I think this part is weak. And in the paperback, I answer some of those critics and also, I think, you know, improve the book. But then there are people who just say, you're going to hell, you're a heretic, you're the smoke of Satan, you're a sodomite, you're a homosexualist, you're a pansy. I will, you know, sort of spare you some of the other words that I've been called. You know, and those people, they're not interested in entering into dialogue. They're interested in just condemning me. So I've tried to reach out to them to no avail. And after a while, you know, as Jesus said, as if they're not going to listen to you, shake the dust off your feet and move on.
So
it's kind of a fool's errand.
You have tried to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Oh.
Early on.
I'm curious, how has EWTN treated you, if they've treated you in any way whatsoever?
I don't know on this topic. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they've even talked about the book. So,
okay.
To be honest, I the answer is I don't know.
Okay. Okay. When we had you on many years ago talking about the book, A Jesuit Off Broadway,
mm-hmm.
I'm just curious if that experience in New York theater brought you any closer to the LGBT community than you might have been before, or...
Well, that's an interesting question. Not really. It's basically just living in New York and ministering to LGBT people, especially, you know, young people, students, you know, people in their 20s and 30s trying to navigate their place in the church. And one of the reasons I wrote this book was because there is this great divide. That's the image of the book, Building a Bridge. It is between the LGBT Catholic community and the institutional church, so bishops and decision makers. And many LGBT Catholics, you know, feel so left out. And also many bishops and priests don't know many LGBT people. So it's kind of like, let's just come together and dialogue. And that the book is really about dialogue. And then the second part of the book is about prayer. And I should mention that fully half of the book is about prayer, you know, Bible passages and reflection questions that sort of talk about Jesus reaching out to the marginalized. And one of the ironies is that none of these websites engage the prayer, which is quite interesting.
Hmm.
So none of them, it's all about the how terrible dialogue is. It's been really fascinating. And I'm not sure why that is. I'm sort of curious if it's that they don't think LGBT people have a right to pray, or they don't want to know what they're praying, or they feel like if they talk, you know, accept the idea that, you know, God or the Holy Spirit might be telling us something new in prayer about LGBT people. But it's been fascinating. It's as if the second part of the book doesn't exist. My image to someone was like, it's like reviewing War and Peace without talking about peace.
Let me ask you this. The church, of course, encourages its members to support certain social political movements without, of course, indicating any specific support for a particular candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, people who are labeled pro-life, politicians mm-hmm. who are labeled pro-life, the church encourages people to, quote, vote pro-life, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible, let's move this to the LGBT issue. Let's say there are two candidates. One is very angry that we have marriage equality in the country, and his mm-hmm. states that he will do anything he can to abolish that. And the other one says, no, we're fine with marriage equality. So as a Catholic voter, can he or she vote for the more liberal one while yet maintaining the understanding of the church on the moral implications of homosexual behavior? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is we're not single-issue voters. That's the answer. So, you know, no one candidate is going to fully sum up Catholic teaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
So no one candidate, you know, there's no candidate, at least that I've heard of, that is, you know, pro-life in terms of being against abortion and pro-social justice in terms of being in favor of migrants and refugees and the environment and, you know, the whole constellation of things that the Catholic Church is talking about. Abortion is not the only issue, and nor is same-sex marriage. And so to tell someone that, you know, this is the one issue is really to go against Catholic social teaching, which is to say it is much more complex than that. So unfortunately, a lot of Catholic leaders have almost tipped their hands and said the only person you can vote for morally is this person, which is also, you know, kind of trespassing against the person's conscience. I mean, the church is supposed to, as the Pope has said, form consciences, not dictate them, because otherwise you're a robot.
So
it's up to each Catholic to determine in his or her own conscience, you know, who expresses best those values, you know. But yeah, unfortunately, it has seemed that the only thing that the church has been interested in are abortion and same-sex marriage, which is, you know, you know, you have to say, what about the poor?
So right? What about
and also, I as I point out in the book, you know, LGBT people are 5 times more likely as youth to commit suicide, right? So it's a life issue, too.
So what
the question
about
is, which lives matter?
Right, right. So what about those examples? And I haven't heard about this lately, but I know in the last few years, where bishops question whether or not a particular politician should be able to receive communion if that politician is Catholic. You know, if that politician doesn't support 100% Catholic, the so-called Catholic viewpoint on this.
Well, which politician does? I mean, you know, Laudato Si is an encyclical. That's the one on the environment. An encyclical is one of the highest levels of Catholic teaching, period. It just is, okay? Now, if you don't believe that keeping the environment safe is important and you are, you know, someone who consistently votes against that, should you also have communion withdrawn from you?
I've never heard
communion,
of a bishop say that.
No, of course not, because that most bishops are focused on one particular issue. And we don't hear bishops say that because there's been this focus on, you know, abortion is a very important topic, and I am pro-life myself, right? But it is not the only topic. And also, the Eucharist is not a weapon. The Eucharist should not be used as a weapon, and certainly not a political weapon. You know, as Pope Francis says, it is medicine for the sick. It's not a reward for the perfect.
Speaking of Pope Francis, I'm assuming you find yourself in good company because he has been criticized for pretty much the same thing you're being criticized for.
Well, a lot of people have said that the reason they're criticizing me is because they can't criticize Pope Francis directly. He has, not exactly the same thing. I mean, he's been quite positive about LGBT people. His five most famous words are, "Who am I to judge?"
Yes.
But there's a document that has come out recently called Amoris Laetitia, which is the joy of love, about family and sexuality. And that's really stirred up a lot of controversy. And he has said more or less, I have said more or less the same thing that he has said, which is that we need to meet people where they are and listen to them. And that's very dangerous for people who think that rules are the only way to move ahead. But when you look at Jesus in the Gospels, it's not as if he's saying rules are unimportant, but he does say they need to be put in perspective. And he regularly sets them aside in terms of dietary laws and, you know, eating grain and when to heal people and who to speak with. And he just does. And I think it's pretty obvious which side he falls on these kinds of questions.
Father Martin, we are down to the wire for this edition of Common Threads, but we'd love to have you back next week and continue this.
I'd be happy to.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today was Father James Martin talking about his book, Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. Please join us again next week for Common Threads on WGVU.